5. Do we have our comments? More to the first part. Okay. We spoke a couple of, a week and a half ago, I spoke about Parshas B'Shalach and the significance of Oz Yashir, and the Oz of the Yashir, and the Oz of the Yashir, and the connection to Vayamin HaShem HaMashal. Now, a little bit about the general idea about how one is supposed to relate to Nisim. I don't know if I mentioned it or not, but the Hasidi Ashkenaz had this, you know, major doctrine, Zecher Asol Nifla Osam, how, again, you don't so much focus on the Nes as what the Nes implies and symbolizes, and, you know, you use the Nisim that you have, you know, during the periods where you don't have a Nisim Kavuyim, and very much the Ramban, maybe even more powerfully, says that in Parshas Bo, as we discussed. So it's very interesting that immediately following Parshas B'Shalach, we have the beginning of Parshas Yisro. And the beginning of Parshas Yisro, the Psukim are very fascinating. The Psukim here say, Yishma Yisro Kohen Midian Chosin Moshe, Eis Kalasher Asa Olof Kim LaMoshe, U Yisrael Amok, Yotzi Hashem, Es Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim. So the Gemara in Zvachim says, Mashmua Shama Uvo. What did Yisro hear that motivated him to come forward at this point? So the Gemara says that there were three things that he heard. One was Kriyas Yamsuf, which of course links it up to the previous Parsha. The other is Mochemes Amalek, which also is connected to the immediate, the Psukim right immediately in front of the Psukim of Yisro. And then the third one was Matan Torah. Of course, the Matan Torah issue is one which gets involved with the whole question of Mukdam Mukhar, which you know, discussed in the Gemara and the Chazal, and then in the Rishonim, the Rashi, the Ramban, etc. These are the different perspectives that are brought in the Gemara in Zvachim. Rashi, when he quotes this Gemara in Zvachim, leaves out, he omits the last one. He doesn't mention Matan Torah. And the question is why? And some of the Mefarshim on Rashi, Halatar, they speak about this problem. Again, you know, try to link it up to the question of Mukdam Mukhar, other things. But it's a, certainly a glaring omission that Rashi only quotes. Again, it could be something with Pshat in terms of the Tzukim that we had previously, or maybe it's something else. But either way, it is significant that Rashi omits Matan Torah. But if we examine these Tzukim, so there's something else that's at least a little bit striking about them. And that is the formality which the Torah uses in the beginning of Parshas Yisro. So it's Vayishma Yisro Kohen Bidjon. Again, we already know that Yisro is the Kohen Bidjon, but it's Vayishma Yisro Kohen Bidjon Chosin Moshe, right? All of his credentials, all of his qualifications, and let's repeat it again. Vayikach Yisro Chosin Moshe Et Tzipora Eishes Moshe. So again, we know that Tzipora is his wife. That's why such a formal, like, name-dropping kind of beginning in Parshas Yisro. Okay. Vayabo Yisro, and then we told again in Pasuk Hey, Vayabo Yisro again, Chosei Moshe, Ubana V'ishto El Moshe, El Hamidbar Asher Huchone Sham Har HaAlokim. Vayomer El Moshe, and again, Ani Chosencha Yisro, Bo Elecha V'ishtecha Ushnei Baneha Ima. Again, it's almost like we get the impression that, you know, Yisro is extremely tentative in his approach to Moshe Rabbeinu. And he feels that it's necessary for him to invoke his yichus, his relationship, both his occupation as Kohen Bidjon several times, but especially he keeps reminding him that he's his father-in-law, it keeps reminding him that he's the father of his wife, which is what father-in-law probably means anyway, that he is the grandfather of his children. He keeps repeating this. And then the break comes in this next pasuk. So either Yisro misunderstood Moshe Rabbeinu and misjudged him, or something happened here, but there's a definite thaw in the relationship. So we're told that Vayetze Moshe Likras Chosno, especially after being sensitive to all the formal introductions that preceded, so I think it's especially interesting. Vayetze Moshe Likras Chosno, it doesn't just greet him and allow him to come in, but he meets him more than halfway, perhaps. By Yishtachu, by Yishaklo, by Yishalu, Ishlorei or Lishalom. So instead of being again Hosein, Moshe, and Kohen Midyon, and the grandfather and the father and all these things, all of a sudden it's, let's say, a definite thought develops here. By Yishtachu, by Yishaklo, by Yishalu, Ishlorei or Lishalom. It's now Ishlorei. They have a kind of an equal relationship. By Yavohu Ohalo, and they come together. Again, it's not even by Yavo Yisrael Ohal Moshe, but by Yavohu Ohalo. In other words, they there's a meeting of minds and a meeting of hearts, and they come together in the Ohel. And then we can, this thought, you know, really continues by Yisaper Moshe L'Chosno, not L'Yisro Chosno, but simply now to the father-in-law, Eis Kalasha Osa Hashem L'Paro L'Mitzrayim, which he had heard about anyway, because by Yishma Yisro, according to Chazal, means that he knew about all of that. Alodos Yisrael, Eis Kalat Lashem Matzalasam Baderech, Bayatzi Leim Hashem. Vayichad Yisrael Akolat Tova, Asher Ol Hashem V'Yisrael, Asher Yitzilo Miyad Mitzrayim. Vayomer Yisrael Baruch Hashem, Asher Yitzilo Tzchem Yad Mitzrayim, Yad Paro, Asher Yitzilo Sa'am Mitachas Yad Mitzrayim. Ata Yadati, Ki Gadol Hashem Yikalu Alokim, Ki Badamar Shazadu Aleihem, etc. And then he's even able to be mocked with Karbonos, Vayikach Yisrael Chosei Moshe, Olo Zvachim Alokim, So this embrace, if you will, of Yisro, right, continues the pace, and is not just between him and Moshe. Maybe Moshe has some obligation to him for family purposes, but everybody else recognizes that he truly deserves to be Chose Moshe, and they obviously follow suit in terms of the relationship between them. And then, of course, this leads into the next parsha, which is the tremendous contribution that Yisro makes to the legal structure of Klal Yisrael. Bahimi Macharas Vayeshev Moshe Lishpot Esa'am Bayamod Ha'am Al Moshe Menavokar Ad Ha'arev Bayar Chalim Moshe again Eiskal Asher Asa La'am Bayomer Mahadab Razer Asher Tarasel La'am Maduat Tayoshi Vavadecha. And we know the whole story. Again, the exchange here is with Moshe and his Chosein. We're not told Yisro, Chosno, Kohen, Midyan, all of that is pretty much dropped. It's Chosein Moshe, Vayomer Chosein Moshe, etc. Okay. So what really is the point of the thought? So it could be, as I said before, that simply, you know, Yisro was scared. He knew Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, back when. You know, that Moshe Rabbeinu was on the run, and he was a refugee, and he took him into his home, and he allowed him to marry his daughter. So, you know, he had one kind of relationship with his son-in-law. And now Moshe Rabbeinu had, you know, become the leader of Klal Yisrael, and his reputation as Vayishma Yisrael. You know, his son-in-law, he was Makare, but again, the relationship is one where Yado was Al Ha'el Yada. In other words, Yisrael was the Kohen Midyan. He was the person who was in a position of stature and power. And now Moshe Rabbeinu has this, you know, worldwide reputation, well-deserved. So it could be simply that Yisro was tentative and, you know, and felt that, you know, he had to establish and remind him, you know, who he was so he would be accepted. But he simply misjudged Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu greets him and remembers him, and, you know, the changes that have taken place in the interim are not a reason for him to exclude him. That itself would be just an interesting, in terms of the relationship, would simply be an interesting development. However, I always thought that there's another possibility which links up with the omission of Rashi in the first pasuk, and that is that Rashi mentions on the pasuk that again seems superfluous. We're told that that Yisro, where did he come from? Yisro Chosein Moshe Ubanav Yishno Moshe El Hamidbar Asher Huchon Esham Har Ha'alokim. So Rashi says, according to the Chazal, that, you know, do we need to be told that he came? Did we know that he was from the Midbar? They came through the Midbar. What's the point? So Rashi says that the point is that he left his cushy job as Kohen Midyan, where he was living in high style. And he was willing to sacrifice everything to go to the Midbar, Lilmod Torah Mimosh Rabbeinu. So maybe it's possible that what Rashi's saying, speculating by his omission, is that Yishma Yisro Kohen Midyon Chosein Moshe, in other words, Yisro came, And Yisro could have been impressed, maybe only by the first two things, by the event of Kriyas Yam Suf and by Melchemes Amalek. And these things drew Yisro to the Jewish people. But Yisro himself felt that, you know, if these were the reasons, or maybe the Moshe Rabbeinu also felt that this is the reason that Yisro is now joining Klal Yisrael, so one should keep him at arm's length. After all, he's joining the winning team, right? He's impressed with all of these dramatic and charismatic events, and there's nothing that impressive about that. And one should be respectful of him. One needs to have a relationship with him. After all, he is your father-in-law. He is the father of your wife, the grandfather of your children. Right? In the past, he did act in the manner of chesed with him. So all this is a good reason to have some relationship with him, but doesn't have to be by ohala. So there's nothing by shtachu, ishlorehu, by yishu. None of that is warranted. But when it was established, somehow it became evident that there was also the Matan Torah part. And not only there was the Matan Torah part as an event, but the significance of Matan Torah, which is the all of Torah, and the idea that, Eina Torah miskayemes, Ela b'misha neimis atzmo aleha, namely, he was willing to give up at the sacrifice of Lubo Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu. So at that point, Moshe Rabbeinu realized who exactly he was. And this, of course, leads to the other parts of the other psukim, in continuation, by Yichad Yisro, by Yisaper. He didn't just tell him the events as he heard them. Now he told him as an initiate, as somebody in the inner circle who would appreciate and understand all the nuances of Avodas Hashem, because here is somebody who's not only impressed with the kind of things that everybody would be impressed with, but who is able to assimilate that there's a connection between Kriyas Yam Suf and Melchemes Amalek, the high points, and the willingness Lelech Lamidbar to give up, his palace and his very good position, Lumo Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, with all that implied. And therefore, he became part of the inner circle, and as a result, he was even able to give advice, the kind of advice that transformed the legal structure of Klal Yisrael, of creating the hierarchical system of Batei Din, etc. So if this is true, this is an important perspective, again, which continues to explain the role of Melchemes Amalek and Kriyas Yam Suf and those kind of events in the overall system of Klal Yisrael. And the truth is that this idea is reflected in Matan Torah itself. Again, the Gemara in Tzvachim Kuf Tazayin says that he heard about Matan Torah. But the truth is that there are two elements to Matan Torah. One is the event itself, Maimon Har Sinai, the event of Kol HaSuvrachim, which is described in the Parsha in such, again, dramatic fashion. Is an event which was unparalleled by any other. And that's one aspect of Matan Torah. And then, of course, there's the O which Torah imposes, but we believe that to be a liberating O, right? Ein ben chor ne lemi she'osek b'Torah u'be mitzvos. But that, of course, is a much more subtle aspect of the Kabbalah HaTorah. Okay, that's the Nasa v'nishma part. So, in a sense, Matan Torah itself really was made up of two components. One was the nace, the miracle, the dramatic part, and the other was the substantive part, the part of which is reflected in terms of Yisro by the ability to give up everything, to sacrifice everything, to go to the Midbar. And the truth is not only reflected in these aspects of Matan Torah, but in the Aseret HaDibros as well. The truth is the Aseret HaDibros begin with Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and nothing could be more fundamental, right, than that. That's right, the foundation of theology. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Tzeitzicha Me'aretz Mitzrayim. But it's fascinating that it ends on what on the surface looks like a rather mundane note. The last of the Aseret HaDibros is the the Dibur Ablo Sachmod, which, as we know, deals with very kind of practical issues. Osachmod Beis Reyecha, Osachmod Eishes Reyecha, Abdo Maso Shoru Hamoro Kol Hashem Reyecha. That's the end, that's the culmination of Aseres HaDibros. And it's very, very peculiar on the surface. Right? It starts off with a bang, Noki Hashem Elokecha. It starts off with the words of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, which were so literally earth-shaking that Klal Yisrael couldn't abide them. Right? They had to appeal to Moshe Rabbeinu, quite in a remarkable moment in world history. Right? Man strives, basically, spiritual man strives for nothing, if not for contact with Rabbanu Shel Olam. That's his purpose in life. And yet here, Klal Yisrael, they're given this opportunity, and it was too much for them. So they literally have to appeal to Moshe Rabbeinu to stop it. So Aseres HaDibros begin, a bang is an understatement. They begin, with a volcano, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And then it all ends up, again, this is the loftiest message that could be given to convey to Klal Yisrael, but it ends up, as say with these petty kind of things. Beis Reyecha, Eishes Reyecha, Abdo, Amaso, Shoro, it gets even worse as you go along, even Chamoro, Kol Shel Reyecha, and every little Shava Pruta that belongs to Reyecha, Lo Sachmo, that's the end of the Aseres HaDibros. Generally speaking, when we find lists, right, talking about well-constructed lists, I'm not talking about the other lists, but well-constructed lists generally begin with a bang and they end with a bang. In other words, the first item on the list sets a certain tone, and the last component, right, is also supposed to leave you, to sum up. It's supposed to leave you, supposed to kind of reach a certain crescendo, something that captures or encapsulates the whole experience. Right? If you want this to be memorable, anyway, if you want something to be to go out with a whimper, so you put everything in the beginning, and you save nothing for the climax. But this is the Aseres HaDibros, and the fact is that it's not a haphazard list, it's a crucial list. Right? Aseres HaDibros, according to some, has a special status in the Torah. Rambam in a tshuva actually seems to reject this idea. It's a very famous tshuva of the Rambam, where they asked him, whether people should stand up during Kriyas HaTorah just for Aseres HaDibros or not. Apparently they didn't stand for Kriyas HaTorah. So should they get up, which is also what happens in many places, probably most places, most shuls nowadays as well. So should they get up specifically for the reading of the Aseres HaDibros? So that's something which again is nahug, in most communities, that they get up for Aseres HaDibros. So the Rambam was sharply critical of this minhag. And the Rambam says, just because they do it, doesn't mean that it's right. And if somebody gives you a bad medicine, they can say just because it's prescribed that you should take it. That's what he says. So this bad medicine, it gives the wrong impression. It conveys the impression that, there's one part of the Torah that's more important than another part. Every word in the Torah, every message in the Torah is of such significance that either you should stand for everything or you should sit for everything. That's the Rambam's view. But Klal Yisrael is not possible on this particular issue. The fact is that every shul that I've ever been in, the people who sit for Kriyas HaTorah all jump up for the Aseres HaDibros. The question is why? So it could be, the Rav suggested this once, the Rav suggested that maybe you should distinguish between Tam Elyon and Tam Tachta. If you read the Dibros, Tam Elyon or Tam Tachta, if you read the Dibros as regular psukim, so maybe the Rambam is right. But if you read the Dibros, not as psukim, but as Dibros, so maybe there's a good justification for everybody jumping up. And that is that in addition to Torah, Kafishol Torah, what you have really is kind of a reenactment of the event of Maimon Sinai. And that event reenacted is what requires you to stand up. So it's not that the Chetza of the Aseres HaDibros is any different than anything else in its stature, but it's the experience or the reenactment that makes a difference. Which is a very interesting and a very suggestive solution, because again, it implies that there are these two aspects of Seres HaNigla. However, the truth is, I think that the minhag of Klal Yisrael is, whether you read the Tanayin or Tan Tachton, that still people get up for Seres HaNigla. There is something to not saying that, I don't know if Seres HaNigla is more important than the other aspect of Torah, but certainly it stands out. Again, according to the according to Sajigon, all Tariag mitzvos really can be encapsulated by the Seres HaNigla. Again, it's a bit of a trick to do that. And, Sajigon is up to the task. You can read it in judgment, whether it's convincing. But there's something to this idea. The Ramban picks up on this idea as well, in the Perish Al-Atara and other places. So there is something about this, Nibros, representing a kind of a slice of Torah that is unique and that is different. Either way, one would expect that the beginning, of course, be critical and dramatic, but at the end be, something to match, something to leave us with, a climax of crescendo. But the truth is that I think a proper understanding of Los Achmon actually leaves us very satisfied in solving this particular problem. We spent a little bit of time when we did the Gemara Bava Metzia. So we discussed the fact that Los Achmon, right, is not just Iser Gzela, and it's not just Iser Machshava, right, or planning to get somebody else's object, but rather it represents something far more profound than that. Namely, quoted then the wonderful comments of Ibn Ezra, who raised the question, how can you legislate in the area of emotions? After all, a person is going to covet something that belongs to his friend. He's going to covet it whether you tell him or not. You can tell him not to do it, not to actually implement his plan, not to go about liberating this object from his neighbor, but that's what you tell him to do. That's prescribing in the area of action. But can you really legislate to him not to be interested, not to have a desire for this object? So that's an Ibn Ezra's question, and Sefer Chinuch asks the same question, and both of them give basically the same answer, although Ibn Ezra's is just more sharply expressed. Chinuch is very strongly stated as well. And that is, again, this mashal of the Kfari, this poor villager, right, who, may in a passing whim, think about what it would be like to marry the princess, but he doesn't really obsess about it because he knows that it's beyond his capacity. Right? His real focus and his real obsessions will be focused on things that are possible for him, given his own realities. So this is the Ibn Ezra, which expresses what I call the idea of halachic reality. The Ibn Ezra says that when the Torah says something is prohibited and something is out of bounds, then for you that should become like the princesses to the Kfari. Should be, so the impact of that prohibition should be such that you literally it becomes a reality to you, what you can do and what you can't do. In the same sense that a person doesn't, really dream seriously. He might have a passing dream, there's nothing wrong with that. The science fiction part of his personality might dream that one day he'll sprout wings and start flying around. But again, not too many people are going to obsess about such a thing, and they're not going to be, realistic. You're not going to think of it realistically. Not too many people are going to open the window and jump out, because they understand that they don't have wings, although it might be a nice thing. It might daydream about it. But a passing dream or thought is not an obsession thing, and it's not serious. So Ibn Ezra says that's the idea behind Los Achmon. So when we understand that that's the idea behind Los Achmon, so we can appreciate it greatly. It turns out that what looks like, mundane and kind of a weak anti-climax turns out to be, the sea, if you will, in the Hebrew sense, the apex of the Aseret HaDibros, the high point of the Aseret HaDibros. It starts off with Anochi Hashem Elokecha, something that, is critical, the foundation of everything. Right, the machlokas between the Bahag and the Rambam, whether one should even count it in the mitzvos. Maybe it's so basic and so foundational that doesn't deserve to be categorized as a mitzvah, that you can't have mitzvot unless you have a mitzvah. So it's outside of the tariyag mitzvot even. Everybody, again, it doesn't require my analysis to establish how important Anochi Hashem Elokecha is. But even as it's, you know, the foundation for everything, and you know, there couldn't be any of the other asserts of Dibros Almos without Anochi Hashem Elokecha. But it's certainly obvious, it's basic, and you know, it's something which, you know, given the right climate, is accessible to everyone, you know, without that much hard work. But you have to be a ma'amin, you have to accept the Rabbanu Shel Olam, and once you do, you know, it changes the way that you live your life and the purpose of your life, etc. However, as you go along in the Dibros, right, and especially the beginning is Ben Adam Lamakom, and then comes Ben Adam Mechadero. Actually, there's an interesting comment of Shamshon Rafal Hirsch. So it has a comment on the on Yisro, on the Aseres HaDibros, where he says, isn't it just very interesting how the first you know, group starts off with commitment, with machshava, and then it works its way into actions. So Vicha, right, even specific actions regarding theology, the belief, then it's like becomes more and more concrete as you get along. But the concrete specifics, the applications. And then even all ben adam lamakom, but specific actions down to kabeis avicha v'yetzinecha, which of course is a transition point. Okay. Then he says when you get to the second half, which is, you know, more the ben adam l'chavero aspect, the social interaction parts, he says it starts off with action. Losirtzach, losina, losigno, and then it ends off on a machshava note again. But assuming that the saf mode is primarily machshava, which is certainly a very basic position. The saf mode based riacha, the saf mode based riacha, avdo shoro kamaro kalashon riacha, then of course in Haskana you even have losis abe, where there's no doubt that it's about machshava. So he just points out, isn't it interesting how the theological, the ben adam lamakom side, you know, starts off with machshava and ends up with maisa, and the ben adam lechadero part actually starts off with maisa and ends up with machshava. So, what is that all about? So he himself says this is part of the broader theme that he has. What it shows is that, you know, despite the differences, the superficial differences and the real differences between different aspects of Torah, the fact is that, you know, there has to be a commitment and a theology and a value system. On the one hand, you can say all of this, but I'm embellishing a little bit. And at the same time, it has to be manifest in concrete actions and performances. And you know, you might think that the Ben Adam Chavero, you know, is primarily about interaction, not the behavior. It's about conduct, which it is. So the kamashmal on there is that's true, but you know, that doesn't exist divorced from attitude. And the same thing is true. You might think that Ben Adam Lamakom is all about attitude and commitment, which in some religions that really is all that it's about. Kamash Malan, you've got to understand that there's this component of action as well. If the commitment doesn't translate into Avodas Hashem, into real actions, then the commitment itself is flawed. Again, I'm embellishing what he said a little bit, but this is the general thrust of it. And the same thing is true the other direction. If Ben Adam Lechavero is just the conduct, that's something. I mean, it's better than, you know, Ish Chavero, you know, Chaim Blau, that, you know, they're killing each other, that there's anarchy. But it's not good enough. Right? It's got to be that these actions reflect. In other words, the theology of the first half has to express itself in actions, and the actions have to reflect a certain philosophy, if you will, as well. I think it's a very interesting and important comment. I would just add that it's even more than that, and that is based on Ibn Ezra and based on what we're saying. Namely, it starts off with an Okei Hashem Elokecha, and it ends up with Lo Sachmod. So both of these are machshava, and the point is that one is the machshava where machshava is obvious, as Hirsch is pointing out, and not only that, but where it's you know, once you make that leap, so if you want to call it a leap, so, you know, it's clear and it's almost, you know, I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's accessible to have this kind of machshava. In a sense, well, Sach mode couldn't exist without Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, but it really is the crescendo and the climax of the Asaras HaDibros. If a person's commitment to the Ribbono Shel Olam is such that, you know, he can take Torah mitzvot and not only do them, and not only, you know, kind of extract the values in some general sense, but literally, you know, integrate them into his life, onto the top that his reality is defined by them, so that's the ultimate in Asaras HaDibros. In a sense, I think this is very much, again, the same two themes, the theme of Mashmu Hashama Uva, Kriyas Yamsuf, and Mechabas HaMalek, and maybe the Kolos of Brachim, of Anokhi Hashem Elokecha, of the Dibur Rishon on the one hand, combined with, you know, the nitty gritty commitment as it really is played out, which in a sense, you know, takes all of that and takes it to a very different and new and more profound level, the level of Lo Sachmo. And indeed, this is also perhaps the reason for the need for, you know, two luchos, and you know, Chazal say it very well, right? In the aftermath of the luchos Rishonos, so you had Matan Torah, so you had the Eidel Hazav, and then you had the second luchos, and Chazal say that that's the one that stuck, because since there wasn't Kolos Rabakim, so Lo Yafa Lachar Inecha Yafa Min Hatsnius. And for that reason, the Luchos Shnios are the ones that survived. But it is, of course, fascinating that, you know, you need both, right? The Shivrei Luchos are still a part of Klal Yisrael's legacy and destiny, together with the Luchos Shnios. And whatever differences there were between Luchos Rishonos and Luchos Shnios, they're implied by the Torah Shabbat Tzav, and they're amplified by Chazal and Mepharshim. It's clear that the Luchos Rishonos, Klal Yisrael is more passive, and it's quite possible that, you know, again, the focus is more on charismatic aspects of the religion, whereas in Luchos Shnios, Klal Yisrael is more active. And again, this Ein Lecha Yafa Min Hatznius wasn't just reflected in the event, but in the content of the Luchos, and it's connected undoubtedly with the fact that that it stuck. So you have both aspects, and we have a Shavuos that we celebrate, and we have a Yom Kippur, right? And in some respects, even Shavuos attempts to mute some of the elements of the Kolos of Rakim of Matan Torah. The big question that always is discussed, if it's really Chag Matan Torah Seinu, why isn't the Torah formulated that way? Why isn't it explicit that way in Torah Shabbat Sab? Partly, perhaps, due to this issue. At the same time, we do still say Chag Matan Torah Seinu. We remember the Kolos of Rakim, and we consider them to be crucial. We consider the Dibros Mipi HaGevura literally to be a crucial experience. At the same time, again, Yom Kippur is the time of the Luchos Shnios, but again, not so explicit. It's not, we don't hammer home that message so much on Yom Kippur, but it's there, and it's important. And this idea is something that comes up in other contexts as well, and I think it's really kind of an approach to Torah generally. For example, we find two types of Kiddush Hashem. The Gemara Yuma speaks about the Ahari Bayabar variety of Kiddush Hashem, the Gimel Averos, right, which is to say Ahari Bayabar, and the Shas Hashmad, the time of the religious crisis, you say Ahari Bayabar, and Parhesia, right, Ahari Bayabar. That's one type of Kiddush Hashem. And then the Gemara also has the kind of Kiddush Hashem where, you know, the local daily quiet Kiddush Hashem. The ones that are under the rubric of Yahavta Hashem Elokecha Shehei Shem Shemayim Misahev Al Yadecha. The Gemara Yuma Tevav tells us that that too is Chilul Hashem, because you have the Gemara in Sanhedrin 9-Dalet, and you have the Gemara Yuma Daf Tevav. But what's interesting is that the Gemara Yuma Tevav speaks about Talmidei Chachamim. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin that find out is for anybody and everybody. And this is reflected in the Rambam. The Rambam begins his chapter on Kiddush Hashem, Perakei, Hilchos Sadiyat Torah. Would I rob him here? So the Perakei Hilchos Sadiyat Torah, the Rambam begins, Kol Beis Yisrael Mitzuvin Al Kiddush Hashem. If it's immediately accessible, not if Kol Beis Yisrael Mitzuvin Al Kiddush Hashem. So it's just an interesting phrase that the Rambam used, Kol Beis Yisrael. He doesn't use that phrase so often. But the point that I think he's trying to make is that this is something that you know, that applies to all members of Klal Yisrael, and the total Beis Yisrael needs to be aware of it. On the other hand, at the very end of that same parak, parak A, then the Rambam says, okay, he starts off, Kol Beis Yisrael Mitzuvin Al Kiddush Hashem Agadol Hazeh, Shenemer Kedash Himself Bnei Yisrael, Umesorin Shelo L'Chalo, Shenemer L'Chalo Shem Kodshi, etc. And at the end he says, Halacha Yidal, the last halacha on the parak, he says, V'yesh Dvarim Acherim Shehen B'chalav Chilol Hashem, Yuhi Shiyatza Som Adam Gadol B'Torah U'Mepursam B'Chasidus, Dvarim Shabrios Miran Limacharav B'Shevilav. After this, she'ena naveros, or is a chilas Hashem? Kegon, shalakach ve'ena nosin de'metach la'alter, who she yeshla v'nimtza mochrim tovin v'makifan, or she yarba b'schok or b'achil or shtia, ein so'am e'haretz v'b'nehem, or she dibur ma'briya se'ena b'nachat, ve'ena m'kabla b'se'ena panim yafos, el ba'al k'tatza v'kas, v'chiyotzim d'ramel hachal l'fi gadlo sholchacham, so'r shidaktik al'atzum v'yatzum l'pnim m'shuras adin. That's very striking. Take it too far. So you must have called the Kalsinos of all of the Muslims, the Sahab and the Maisab, or is the Kiddush of Hashem, Allah, the Kasabama, the Yomali, Abdi, Atar Yisrael, the Shemachai, Esfire. That's how the Rambam concludes the parable. So again, it's just very interesting because in most, you know, most religious perspectives, you would think the opposite. Right? The big event, you know, the person who can step up and, you know, literally give up his life in a dramatic moment, he's the one, you know, who gets all the press. Admired, that's the heroic religious figure. And you know, the little guy who, you know, is consistent and, you know, pious and, you know, does his quiet thing, you know, is often overlooked. You know, they say, oh yeah, you know, nice fellow. But nobody, you know, lists him as the person who best represents the concept of devotion. But in the Rambam, it's exactly the opposite. It's called basis halachically, it's surely it's called Beis Yisrael Mitzuvin Al Kiddush Hashem. But more than that, is that the Rambam basically is telling us that this ability to be the Kaddish Shem Shemayim every day, Shehei Shem Shemayim Zayim Al Yadecha, which the Rambam doesn't quote it, but that's the Gemara's basis in Yuma, that's for the Gedolim. And it's interesting that he calls it Maisach Hasidus and Mitzvim Neshuras Hadin, Mitzvim Neshuras Hadin, or a person who has the ability to, and people look to him, and he's not knowing the Fnim Meshur Sadin, so that becomes Chilul Hashem. So normally we think of Fnim Meshur Sadin as you know, extraordinary, supererogatory conduct. But how can the neglect of Fnim Meshur Sadin constitute a Chilul Hashem? Right. But for people of this stature, apparently it can. That's Chiddush in the way that the Rambam is writing it, which is even beyond the way it's formulated in the Gemara, because the Rambam adds these things about the Pnim Meshur Hasadin and Hasidus. So it turns out that when the Rambam's talking about the little things, he's addressing the real Gedolim in Seshav. Yasa Osam Adam Gadol B'Torah U'Mepursam B'Hasidus. Hasidus in the Rambam means Pnim Meshur Hasadin also, by the way. Dvarim Shabrios Mirana Nimacharon Peshkila. So again, it's this awareness that, you know, the only people who can really rise to that level and who we can expect to and whose neglect, you know, constitutes a breach of some sort. Neglect of the Pnim Meshur Hasadin constitutes a breach of some sort. A very strange idea, but a very powerful one. Are people who, you know, are totally immersed in the system, totally committed to it, and who have the understanding and the sensitivity that goes along with it. So again, we start off with one kind of Kiddush Hashem, and the end, the climax, is with another. Again, it's like Anochi Hashem Elokecha, almost, parallel of Anochi Hashem Elokecha in Parakei, Lukas Yisomi HaTorah, and we finish off with a kind of Losach mode in the Halacha Yiralis of Parakei. And the truth is, we have this in other contexts as well. The Kibush Aretz and Kibush Aretz, just to name another one. Eretz Yisrael was invested with Kedusha at least twice. There's a mitzvah Kedushas Baretz at least twice. One was in the time of Yehoshua, and the other was in the time of Ezra. So in the time of Yehoshua, it was not Ayidei Kibush. Yehoshua conquered Eretz Yisrael. In the time of Ezra, as the Rambam himself puts it so often, it was done Ayidei Yeshiva B'Chazaka. So the Rambam's view is that the Kedusha Rishona of Yehoshua was Kitcha L'Shaita V'lo Kitcha L'Yasid Babel. The Kedusha of Ezra, on the other hand, the Ole Babel, was Kitcha L'Shaita V'Kitcha L'Yasid Babel. This is the Rambam's view as he formulates it in the Chosbe Samchira, and again the Trumos, and in several places. This is the Rambam's perspective. So all the Rishonim, all the Achronim rather, ask him, the Farshim, ask him, the Rambam, you know, what's going on here? Why should the Kibush of Yehoshua have been terminated at the time of the first Korban, and the Chazaka of Ezra, the Yeshiva of the Chazaka of Ezra, was able to outlast the second Korban? Why should that be? And various answers are given. Kazanishna is perplexed by this question. He says, I don't understand it. After all, on the contrary, there was, Kibush and Chazaka in the kind of Ezra in a certain sense. He says, I just don't understand why this should be so. So, there are different answers that are given. Some suggest that, it's not so much that the Chazaka of Ezra was superior to the Kiddush of Yeshua, but that the Chazaka of Ezra, in combination with the Kiddush of Yeshua, was enduring. And it's also an interesting idea. And there are other answers that are given as well. The Rav one suggested that that the Kiddush of Yehoshua, I'm sorry, that the Chazaka of Ezra was built around Yerushalayim. And since Yerushalayim had Kiddush Olamis, so in a sense, since they returned to Yerushalayim and built Eretz Yisrael from Yerushalayim out, so that's maybe something that had to do with this issue. Maybe. But there's another possibility. I think the Rav said this also once, and it could be, as if you recall, a footnote in Kol Dovid Dofek or something, or maybe somewhere else, and that is that maybe it's exactly the opposite of what people think. Namely, the Kibush of Yehoshua was a very striking event, right? And it left no doubt that Klal Yisrael were in control of Eretz Yisrael. But the Kibush can be overturned by another Kibush. A Yeshiva B'Chazaka, on the other hand, implies a different kind of level, a different level of commitment. Again, it may not be as discernible as is a kibush, but in a sense, the relationship between the people and the land was a deeper one. It was a more committed one, precisely because they were a minority, and precisely because they didn't have political and military control over Eretz Yisrael, and yet they came there and they sacrificed and they built, with great difficulty, they built, the new Yishuv. So that's what gave them, or that's what invested Eretz Yisrael with greater, with a kind of Kedusha, which was not subject to simply being terminated by losing militarily, politically, even, religiously, in the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. But again, it's very fascinating that both of these elements are necessary. In other words, there's some evidence that, if not for the Kibush of Yehoshua, then maybe Ezra's Chazaka may not have fully worked, or at least that there's impact of one on the other. Chaim explains, there's a very interesting problem that arises with regard to the Sugin Gittin. Sugin Gittin speaks about Surya as being Kibush Yachid. And why it's Kibush Yachid is itself a debate, but Surya is Kibush Yachid. It says it's a debate whether Kibush Yachid, Shmei Kibush, or Lo Shmei Kibush, And if you hold kibush yachid, no shnei kibush, so the dinim of mitzvah tluyos haaretz will be drabanan in Surya. Okay, so that's the Gemara. The problem is that we find that the status of Surya seems to be affecting the kiddusha haaretz even after the time of Ezra. In some Gemara, that seems to be the indication. And all the Achronim are very bothered by this. They say, good, the question of kibush yachid or shnei kibush, or locate shnei kibush, was a question in the time of the kibush of Yehoshua. Right? Or the extension of that kibush, David, etc. It's all bias risha. But once the first kiddusha was terminated, because the bias rishon was chale, so then everything started over again with Ezra. Ezra there wasn't an issue whether Surya was kibush yachid or not kibush yachid. What does that do with anything? So Chai suggests the several answers to this question. And one of the answers that he suggests is based on the Yerushalmi, which seems to say that the pasuk "Tivcha v'hirbcha mi'avosecha" establishes that the second kibush, "Tivcha v'hirbcha mi'avosecha," it's a reference to the second kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. "Tivcha v'hirbcha," meaning it'll be built on, but it'll be better than the first one. But built on and better than still means built on. So the idea is, if you can't have Eretz Yisrael in kedushas Ezra in an area which wasn't miskadesh the kedusha rishon, that's the tivcha v'hirbcha mi'avosecha. That's one interpretation. It's not luchah. But to me, this is a very fascinating concept. What it establishes again is that even though you're taking the position that that kibush rishon was somehow not as hardy, not as durable as chazaka of Ezra, but the fact is, it doesn't mean that once it was doesn't mean it doesn't continue to play some sort of a role. It does play a role. You need both aspects, and you need both aspects because again, there's this broader theme of kedusha having two elements and two components. There is the big event, and the Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and the Kriyas Yamsuf, and there's also the Lo Sachmo, and there's also the Halacha Yirala for the Rambam. So there's the kibush, and there's the chazaka. I think this is all a pattern to find in many other contexts as well. But it establishes for us, I think, an appropriate model about how to integrate these aspects of Avodas Hashem. And on the one hand, there is this dramatic step that you take sometimes, or witness to some dramatic event or phenomenon. And that's not to be dismissed. As I say, even Maminim, what I said about the context of Rav Yashir. Right? Sometimes, the Maminim say, yeah, very nice, everybody else needs the miracles, but we don't, we're committed. And there's something very admirable about that, but I think it's also incorrect. Namely, even Maminim have to be inspired when they come face to face with an Eis Nigla. Not only with an Eis Nista. Then the fact that they're even more impressed with, or that they're as sensitive to, if not more, the next Nistar, so that, in combination, that's even more impressive. But it's Ashira Lashem, as I said, Ki Gamal Aloy. You have to appreciate the moment as well. You have to appreciate the Kibush, and you have to appreciate the Bukos Rishonos, and you have to appreciate Kol Beis Yisrael Metzuvim of the Kiddush Hashem. All of these things are critical to our worldview. But as I say, they don't end there. The actual crescendo is Lo Sachmo. The crescendo is, that he came from the Midbar, and that he was, willing to give up his plush position as Kohen Midyan, at least for a time, in order to struggle, simply, Lilma Torah Mipi Moshe Rabbeinu. And if that's the case, again, as I said, that's an important balance that one can't speak about too much. That's really one of the critical issues in Avodas Hashem. And especially today when people are speaking so much of their desire, to be inspired. People are looking for inspiration and people are looking for spirituality. And, I understand it. It's not people think it's a new phenomenon. It's in the nature of religion. That there's always going to be this tension between different aspects and different components of religion. We're in a particularly superficial era at the moment, the age of the soundbite, in which people want immediate spiritual gratification as well. And therefore it's a little more emphasized than maybe it has been in the recent past, this search for meaning and spirituality. But most people who are speaking about their search and their desire to be exposed to spirituality and meaning, they don't really mean the Mosachmod variety that flows from the sacrifice of the Yisra Bamidbar, the difficult work and the years of study, and that's not what they're looking for. What they're looking for is a quick spiritual fix, like everything else, and they're looking for a kibush, and they're looking for a revelation of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and they're even willing to sacrifice kol beis Yisrael metzuvin al kiddush Hashem. It's very heady to be in that situation. It's heroic, but it's heroic and heady. But again, there's room for that, and it plays a role. But if it's divorced from the luchos shniyos and the mosach mode and everything else, then it's of limited value, and it certainly can't be sustained. And I think our challenge is both for ourselves and trying to convey what Yadus and what Halacha is to other people, is to try to convey this balance and the right balance of the components involved. I think that's very much part of the message of Parshas Yisro. All right, a few more minutes, maybe I'll